This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is Wednesday, which Mike Lefko thinks is the worst day of the week, but that's impossible when you've got this guy joining you on the show. And you get a chance to speak to this man that makes any day the best day of the week. He's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. He is the one, the only, John Morosi with us. How are you, man?
Good evening or good afternoon from down the coast here in San Diego. Winter meetings going on. It's been a busy winter meetings, one of the very best that we've seen, I think, in terms of the drama and the quality of the players signing. So still about 24 hours to go before we head out of town. So let's see if Jerry DePoto has a move potentially up his sleeve this evening.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into that. I'm curious, now that the big domino has fallen, and that would be Aaron Judge, 9 years, $360 million to stay in New York. And I was making the case for that, John, that that's his best option. They know him. He's got slack there. He goes to any other team, he's expected to hit 62 every year and live up to that deal. So it seemed like the obvious move, and he ends up staying there. So now do we see the other deals start to fall at a rapid, whether it's Correa, whether it's Bogarts, whether it's any of the bigger names we were talking about?
I think so. And I'll say this, that the shortstop market now, especially because of two of the teams that were heavily involved in the Judge sweepstakes, the Giants and the Padres, both could add a shortstop. And so as you look at the Swanson, Correa group, Bogarts as well, I do believe that those two teams, the Giants and Padres, will be heavily involved in trying to court those players. We could also see the Cubs get involved on a number of them. I think the Diamondbacks are a fit as well. And what's happened now is, now that you've seen Judge go off the board in addition to Trey Turner, Verlander, DeGrom, when you want your free agent market to function in a relatively orderly fashion, this is what you want to see. You want to see the big stars sign relatively early in the offseason and the winter meetings in terms of the line of demarcation. I think you want to see them sign, which then clarifies the market for everybody else. And I think especially the Giants and the Padres are in a position where they thought they were going to be spending upwards of $300 million on a superstar in Aaron Judge. And so if the price comes lower than that and you're able to still get a frontline perennial all-star shortstop, I think that would be a good outcome for them, considering the disappointment that they probably feel right now.
Hey, JP, how much of a present do you owe your wife for helping her, you break the news because it was her birthday?
Right. So here's the story. So Mike, thank you for watching the show and for chiming in on that. So quick story. So I'm out here on the West Coast joining all of you in the beautiful Pacific time zone. But of course, my family's back in Michigan, and this is my wife's birthday. I, every year, miss her birthday because, unfortunately, she did not plan things well in advance to have her birthday not fall during the winter meeting. And so so as a result, I miss it every year. And so this morning, before she went to work at the hospital, I had to get up and call her and wanted to make sure we talked early in the morning. So I set my alarm for 5 a.m. out here. And got up at 5, and there had been a text sent to me at about 4:45 with some pretty important information about Aaron Judge. And so I said, "Oh, well, this is pretty good that I woke up early to wish her happy birthday." Because had I not, and had it been a more of a normal 6 a.m. wake up, I might have knocked out in the scoop. So as it was, happy birthday to Alexis, and thank you to her as always, because she is the only reason why, really. Really and truly, the only reason why I was able to report a nice story this morning. So I appreciate you asking, and yes, I have thanked my wife many times over, and now it's a matter of public record that this is her birthday, so she's getting a lot of nice birthday wishes from people that she wasn't expecting to hear from.
Yeah, now you don't owe her as big of a present, right? Because she's getting the public birthday wishes.
Exactly. So you're so right, Mike. So for me, I'm trying to, when you are away on your spouse's birthday, the best you could hope for is to play for the tie, to just get back to level. And so I would just say that the hole that I have to dig myself out of when I return home is just, it's a little shallower now than it was 24 hours ago. So it's really, really nice. So congratulations to Aaron Judge, and also thank you as well.
I like that Mike looks at the angle of, now I don't have to get as big of a present as I otherwise would have had to.
Right.
So I've saved money on this whole thing.
Hey, love it.
All right. So the Judge deal done. Going back to the Yankees, we'll see what happens with the other guys. Let's talk about this Mariner team and what they have done, what they haven't done. They still, by their own admission, have said this. They need another outfielder. They need another bat. Who might that be? Who are we looking at? Are we still in the Benintendi, Nimmo range? Are we sleeping on somebody that we're not talking about? Who's a realistic option? Because I think they've made it pretty clear they're not going to go spend big money on anybody, and that's not always necessary. But you know, those of us that were wishing for Trey Turner or maybe Xander Bogaerts, or I don't know, I'd like to see him pull off a trade for Brian Reynolds personally, but I don't know what the Pirates would ask in exchange. Right. What do you think?
I do think Reynolds is a possibility. I'm not sure if after the Luis Castillo deal that the Mariners would feel compelled to probably offer. You'd have to really give another top 100 in the industry type prospect at the very least to get Brian Reynolds. So I think, A, you have to have that appetite to really give up a high-end player. And the other piece of this is that there are enough quality bats out there now, and this I think is one probably frustrating part of this for the Pirates and the trade request and how it's all unfolding, is that there are so many other credible, good outfielders available. And I would say Nimmo is very good. And Benintendi, when he's at his best, is an all-star. You look at Masataka Yoshida, who was posted effective as of today. So his market will take, you know, some weeks to work through, but he's a really good contact bat who I think would fit exceptionally well in Seattle, and we know for a fact that Jerry DePoto has talked about having scouted him already and prepared for his availability. So I think could we see Michael Conforto come back home in the Pacific Northwest? There are so many good, at least good, average, above average outfield bats available that I expect the Mariners to get one of them. And I think as long as those options are available, whether it's, again, Nimmo, Conforto, Benintendi, Yoshida, as long as those options are there in the free agent market, I think it's going to be a little hard for them to meet what's going to be an extraordinary high price for Reynolds in the trade market.
Hey, JP, what do you know about Yoshida? What kind of player is he, and how much interest is he going to get? It seems like whenever you have a big-name foreign posting, that every high-spending team is out there as well. And we've certainly seen the Mariners be in on some of these guys, but then we see a big-spending team swoop in and grab one. What does the market look like for Yoshida?
I think it's going to be strong. To me, he has the potential to sign a 4 or 5 year deal. Maybe it's a little lighter in terms of the years, but I believe he's going to be a strong multi-year contract. He has proven that he can hit. If you think about his hitting ability, bat to ball, there's a little bit of a commonality with Brett Gardner, who obviously was a really valuable player for the Yankees for a long time. Maybe not ever a superstar, but a really good player. And I think that he, from what I can tell with Yoshida, what I've been told from observers of Japanese baseball, is that he's someone that is he maybe somewhere around the Brett Gardner, remember Nori Aoki, who of course played for the Giants for a long time, and the Brewers. I think that sort of a bat. But for me, that is in many ways what the Mariners need. They've addressed the power issue by bringing in Teoscar. They have, I think, some more flexibility now they traded Winker. I think that was a really important piece of that equation, that they brought in Colton Wong. I think that having one more lefty bat to balance things out a little bit, and someone who isn't necessarily going to come in and say, well, I've got to start all 162, gives you still some flexibility. If Kelnick shows up and really is ready, you know, that maybe there's a way to kind of split time and rotate guys through a DH spot. There's room there. And I think that having one more contact-oriented bat, and I do think Yoshida would give you a little bit of power upside and maybe grow into it as time goes on. I just think he's a really, really interesting player. I do think the Yankees, who still need a left fielder, even after getting Judge to play right, they could be a fit for Yoshida. The Blue Jays are another team that I would mention. The Giants, of course, they've already now added Mitch Haniger, but they wanted to get one more outfielder, and that's why they were pursuing Judge. So I think the market's going to be robust to the point that I think his overall contract will be 3 years at a minimum and potentially longer than that.
3 years at minimum of what? Say that again. Your phone is a little...
Three years, at least 3 years in terms of duration. And then I think that the per year, I could see him getting around $10 million a year over a 3 or 4 year deal. I think that's probably where his market will eventually go.
How old is he?
He is in his later, like mid-late 20s, like okay. 20, 27, I believe.
Concerning Mitch Haniger, you brought up he's gone now, a member of the Giants, at 14 and a half a year for 3 years. Is that about what you thought he'd get, more, less? How do you feel about that deal?
It is, because when we think about it, and we talked about this a fair amount during the general manager's meetings, he benefited from not being attached to the qualifying offer. And we're seeing a lot of very good free agents who are still out there and available, and their market is being impacted by the QO. And whether it's starting pitchers like Nathan Eovaldi or others, Chris Bassett's one more example, the qualifying offer is a real impediment to the free agent market for those guys. And I think in the case of Haniger, he benefited greatly from the Mariners not giving him that QO. So I think he's a really good fit for San Francisco. Of course, he grew up in California. He's got a lot of connections there. So I think West Coast was probably always going to be one of his preferences. And he's going to bring that team that same grit and leadership that we saw him have with the Mariners. And I think it was a really good signing for the Giants. It still leaves them the flexibility. I realize they missed out on Judge, but they could still be a strong contender for someone like a Brandon Nimmo. And, of course, we talked about him a lot, Nimmo with the Mariners. I do think Nimmo is the next best outfield free agent option available.
Hey, JP, we haven't talked to you since the Colton Wong news broke, I believe, right? Well,
yes.
We have. We certainly didn't.
Yes.
So, what are your thoughts on the move, maybe independent of what the Mariners gave away? Because I know getting rid of that Jesse Winker contract was a big part of it, but just Colton Wong, the player, what do you like about what he can bring, or what do you think he can add to this Mariners roster?
I've always liked Colton Wong, and by the way, to update what I said earlier, Yoshida is 29. So I knew he was late 20s. I said 27. He's actually 29. So with Wong, I love that he's someone that as soon as he arrived in the major leagues, he was in the World Series in his first year with the Cardinals in 2013. He was on the big stage immediately. And I love that about a player that was in St. Louis, then was in Milwaukee. He's been on contending teams a lot. He's played a lot of meaningful games. He had a little bit of a defensive slump during the course of this past season, but he got himself, I think, corrected to where he was really good defensively down the stretch. I think offensively, he's always been someone that he's had a little bits of streakiness in the past. I think he's someone who's been a very well-respected teammate, and he gives you a very, very solid at-bat from the left side. Knows the strike zone exceptionally well. And I think he's someone that will benefit likely from the shift not being in play. Obviously, he's always been able to hit to all fields. But I just think giving him an even broader canvas to hit against will be to his benefit. And I just think Wong in general is a pro's pro. Great personality, really great teammate, quick to smile, just a really, really great way about him that I've always enjoyed talking to him in the past. And like he will be on the all 7-10 team as well, just because he's such a great guy. But he is also someone that I really just trust him in a big spot. He's been through a lot in the game, and he learned to play the game in a very fundamental way in the St. Louis organization. I'm just a big fan of what he brings. And when I thought about the options the Mariners had, if they weren't going to get a Trey Turner and move Crawford to second, I really think Wong was about as good as they were going to do in trade. And I think the other benefit, and you alluded to it, was just, the Winker situation had gotten to be a little uncomfortable. And Toro, there was a little bit of redundancy with Moore and some other guys, Haggerty a little bit, to where they had enough utility guys, and they needed someone that's going to be a legit everyday player. And Milwaukee, at different times, have been trying to save a little bit of money, and so that helped them do this. I think it was just a really good opportunistic trade by the Mariners that made a ton of sense, and they're bringing in somebody who I think just gives you a really solid, thorough at-bat. I think that to me, when I when I was watching game three against Houston and all the at-bats and extra innings, I said to myself, this team needs a little bit of a different look. They need a little bit of a different guy to have to pitch to that's not going to swing his stuff off the corner, that's just going to make you be in the zone. And I think Colton does that. I think bringing in Teoscar, he gives you a different kind of at-bat, but he's also a hard guy to pitch to. And I think that both Wong and Teoscar give the bonus of not only just the production, but they are guys that can grind an at-bat, and I think Colton especially does that. He's a great pickup for the Mariners.
Hey, what do you make of his season at the plate last year? Because they hardly ran him out there against lefties. He had 350 at-bats against righties, just 80 against lefties, and hit 138 with a 266 on base. But you look at his career, historically, he's been pretty solid against lefties. So do you know what was happening last year with him?
You know, it's a great question. I think part of it, too, for the Brewers, they did have Jace Peterson, who they could platoon and fit in there. But that's a great question in terms of what the quality at-bats were there. They are a team that do platoon very aggressively. And I do think that whether it was a physical thing, he did miss, I think, a little bit of time this past year to where perhaps maybe there was an issue where he wasn't fully – maybe his swing didn't feel quite as good from that side of the plate. I think that's to me what I would ask. I mean, someone that certainly is a really good versatile bat, but I would expect he's someone that's going to bounce back in that regard. That maybe from a physical standpoint, if he's feeling better on with his swing against both righties and lefties, that his production will even out a little bit. But that to me is more of an aberration than what I would expect from Colton Wong in 2023.
JP, what's it been like being back at the winter meetings in person? More or less movement than expected? The wonderful, familiar chaos back. How's it been being back there in person?
Loving it. It's been great. You know, to be back under one roof has been awesome. Seeing a lot of agents and people, executives who I haven't seen in a couple years, that part's been great. It's just been fun. I mean, it really, this is, you know, to make the broader kind of life point, this is one of those big events that feels quite normal and quite reassuring. And for that reason, I feel very, very grateful to be here and to sort of, you know, just connect with people, because this is a big year for the sport. We've got the World Baseball Classic coming up, which I know we're going to talk about a lot here in the weeks ahead. Can't wait for that. It's going to be a lot of fun just to see all the stars playing for their countries. And so we had the media day for that yesterday. Scott Boras did his State of the Union, which is always something that we all look forward to. So it's great. I think that in general we are back to a very normal version of this sport and of our routines in life. And so I feel very, very grateful. I also love that there are some good hockey fans that are in the baseball community too. So I was able to, you know, chat a little bit about Shane Wright and getting his big first goal for the Kraken, which was great. It was that classic game, the Canucks and Canadiens, the 7-6 final. So I try to keep an eye on you have to kind of keep your focus a little bit on a couple things outside of the bubble of the winter meetings. Because if you don't, then you kind of lose track of life. You have to kind of keep a couple little things outside of the world. So, you know, it's been great. And I think overall the Mariners, while it's been a quiet couple days, I've been keeping my ear out. And I do think the outfield question will be answered. And I'm excited in general for the way they've done things this offseason. Again, my homework assignment from you guys. That's a really good question as to what happened last year. I got to check with my Brewer people, and I'll get back to you about what happened with Wong facing lefties last season.
Hey, let me ask you quickly about Carlos Correa, because I'm seeing sort of conflicting reports on Twitter. People, there's tweets out there saying the Dodgers will not pursue Carlos Correa, partly due to concern about the fan base's reaction to the move. And then others saying, well, it's partly because they have the Trevor Bauer appeal going on, and they don't know if they're going to have to pay him. So they're waiting to see if they're going to have to pay him whatever he's owed, and that could impact whether they go after Correa. Which are those both true, or what do you think there's concern about bringing Carlos Correa in, who's obviously closely associated with the cheating situation in Houston, or what do you know about all that?
I do think that the Dodgers have to be mindful of both situations. I think both of those things can be true, that they are maybe a little bit reluctant. You know, Freddie Freeman was kind of a special circumstance. It was late in the offseason, coming out of a lockout, where maybe the rest of his market was a little uncertain, and they were able to get him at what they deemed to be a pretty fair price. So I think Freddie was a special case. I think with Bauer, You're right. This is a very, it's a very complicated situation. And I have no idea what the arbitrator is going to rule on that, how much of that money they're going to have to pay, but it is a significant piece of their decision-making process, understanding what that amount of money is and what it would mean if they have to pay it. So that to me is certainly an element of the Dodgers process. The other part is when you consider Correa and the way the fans would react. I mean, there is still to this day, 6 years later now, a real residue of what happened in 2017. And Correa, in many ways, rightly or wrongly, is one of the faces of that team during that time. And so I think it would be complicated. It would be something they have to sort of explain and work their way through with their fan base. There may be some fans that really don't get behind that idea. I do tend to think that, you know, in the world of sports, that fans are relatively forgiving, especially when you're wearing the uniform of the home team, no matter what had happened in the past. But I think that in that case, Correa, that would be certainly be putting that to the test. I think there's probably a little bit of a better chance of Correa being a Giant than being a Dodger. And I would also say this, that a year from now at the winter meetings, do not be surprised if we're talking about Shohei Ohtani signing with the Dodgers, because by then the Bauer contract is over. And I think there's a little more clarity about what their payroll is going to be a year from now. And Shohei Ohtani would be a perfect Dodger for many reasons.
Hey, quickly, I know we're up against the break here, but as far as the Correa thing goes, do you think that's more about the way they handled it? Because he came off, Bregman came off very smug, like, oh yeah, we're sorry. And Correa was the one saying, oh, okay, that's enough already. Enough talking about it, when they didn't even, that was the pandemic year. They didn't even play in front of fans. They weren't hearing it other than from reporters. So it feels like the way they handled it is almost as damaging as what they did. Not saying it's equal, but I think that's, for right, me, why it's lingered as much as it has.
Well, it's a fair question. And I think that a couple things. The teams that played the Astros that year that were knocked out by them are based in New York and Los Angeles, where there are a fair number of media outlets. And so we're reminded of that quite often. I think if they had beaten two small market teams, it probably wouldn't have quite the same cultural resonance that it does. And I actually think if you go back in this, and again, like, there was a lot going on in our lives in February and March of 2020, but Correa was, I thought, the one who actually answered the most questions, was sort of the spokesperson out in front of that. And I think probably took ownership of it to a greater extent than most other guys did. And so for me, I thought the way he handled it revealed a high level of character after the fact. I'm not talking about what had happened in 2017, but spring of 20, he was answering the questions. And I think that he has been, and Carlos has been, kind of an open book with respect to that. I also think he wants to find, after seeing his successor be the talk of baseball and Jeremy Peña for the whole month of October, Carlos Correa wants to find the biggest stage he can find with the best team and win the most games that he possibly can, because that's, he's motivated by winning and being the dude. And I think that for him, Minnesota was a great place for him for 2022. I do not believe he's going to be a Twin. I think he wants to go to a major market with a chance to win now, where the fans are going to love him. And is that LA? I tend to think that San Francisco would offer more of what he needs than what the Dodgers would offer.
John, we appreciate it. As always, it's great to talk to you, my friend. Stay safe out there. Have fun, and we will talk to you next week.
Sounds great, guys. It is a wonderful time of year. Just grateful to be here, and thanks for being flexible, doing it one day early. I'll be flying back tomorrow back to Michigan trying to devise the best way I can celebrate my wife's birthday 2 days late. So wish me luck, okay, guys?
Thanks, JP.
Thanks, John. There you go. Our weekly conversations with John Morosi, our MLB and NHL insider, presented by Stanford's Restaurant. Coming up, will the Panthers be as tough for this Seahawks team as the Rams were? We're going to get into that next. We got Lefko in for Wyman. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports Station.
Our thanks to John Morosi, who joined us in the previous segment, in case you guys are just tuning in. Really good stuff from him. That'll be available on the podcast page after the show at seattlesports.com. We got Big Ray Roberts joining us at 4 o'clock. We'll talk about this O-line, what's been going on with them. Does it feel like they've maybe taken a step back? The run game's been a little rough. It's been rough defending the run. It's been rough establishing the run, too. So we'll talk to Big Ray at 4 o'clock. And then speaking of O-line, our player spotlight today will feature Damian Lewis. That'll happen at 5 o'clock today. And then at 5:30, we'll turn you over to Cougar basketball. So stay tuned for that at 5:30. So there you go. Meanwhile, the Panthers come in, not a great team. This is a team that's been struggling. They've gone from Sam Darnold to Baker Mayfield to back to Sam Darnold to whoever. I mean, they don't seem to have any answers. But it is one of those teams, Mike, that I said, as we looked with 8 games left, Dave and I looked at the remaining schedule and said, all right, what's their record? 4-4, 5-3, what's it going to be? There were 2 teams I sort of removed from the equation, saying you've got no business losing to either one of these teams. Well, they've already lost to one of them. One was the Raiders.
Yeah.
The other is the Panthers. To me, I look at both those teams and saying, on your home field, if you're the team, and I think the Seahawks were, 6-3 at the time we were doing that, I think. If you're this team, truly, those are 2 teams you don't lose to on your home field. If you're really a playoff contender, now, there's always, the old saying comes from something, any given Sunday, that you can be beaten, and the Raiders prove that. This is a game you can ill afford to lose. Panthers are 4-8. Their 3 wins versus the NFC South and a win against the Broncos. They're not beating the best of the best. They struggled to beat the Rams. The Seahawks did. They lost to the Bucs. They lost to the Raiders. There's no guarantee, but you're on your home field. You struggled a bit last week. You got it done against a wildly undermanned team. I mean, just those Rams had nobody. And you really had to pull that one out. So I'm looking for a more comfortable win this week.
What's funny is that where the Panthers have done well is strangely where the Seahawks don't do well. And that's just pure team-wise. That has no relation to anything we're about to talk about. But it is a little ironic that the Panthers, most of their wins have come against their division, and the Seahawks are winless against the NFC South. Well, maybe it's just that division this year. So maybe they will lose. But no, logically speaking, this is not a Panthers team like the Rams or like the Raiders. You guys talked a lot about the Raiders. They had talent. Their record didn't indicate how good they were. Derek Carr is serviceable to good.
6 of their 7 losses were by
very
one
close,
score.
Right. Yeah. So the Raiders, they were much better than the record. They showed that. The Rams, I know they were missing a lot of people, but that was a Super Bowl team from last year, and they had a ton of talent, and they still had a lot of talent out there. And don't discount how important that Bobby Wagner revenge game was. He got that team fired up, and I think maybe more than any of us figured, because from the perspective of the Seahawks, we were saying, look, it's going to be interesting to go against Bobby Wagner. All right, there's no animosity there like there might have been in the opener. But from Bobby Wagner's side, look how fired up he was for that game. And he and Jalen Ramsey, those are fierce, fiery competitors. That did a lot for that defense, and I think it certainly impacted the entire Rams team. So you throw that in the mix, you throw a division game in the mix. I know they're missing their 3 best players, but they still have guys. They still have a Greg Gaines. They still had Bobby Wagner. They still had Jalen Ramsey. Offensively, yeah, there were no excuses. But defensively, the Rams still had guys. This Panthers team doesn't really have anyone. I mean, their best player, they traded away. They got rid of Christian McCaffrey. Deontay Foreman's been good, and the run defense is a concern, and we've talked about it. I know you and Dave will talk about it plenty more leading up to the game. But outside of Deontay Foreman, you really do have a rotating cast of quarterbacks, where they went from Baker Mayfield to P.J. Walker to Sam Darnold to, well, we'll go to Baker. No, wait, we're going to go back to Sam Darnold, the guy we benched, and then they just get rid of Baker Mayfield. So there are no excuses for the Seahawks team. That being said, I still think it's going to be a close game. I think this is the nature of the team this year.
Yeah, well,
because of that defense.
Yeah, we'll see what the defense. I mean, that's the biggest question going into this game is, you can't look at any opponent and go, well, they don't do this very well. They don't do that very well on offense, so the Seahawks will be able to crush them there. No, I think they've proven that you can't count on any of that. Seahawks had been doing very well against the run. They did, and Saquon Barkley being the high watermark of their, they were sort of at the peak of their powers, if you will, at that time. They looked fantastic. He was a non-factor, but I don't know what's happened, what's changed. I don't know if it's the bare front and everything that KJ was talking about or not. But the fact remains, in three games against two of the worst rushing teams in the NFL, the two worst, the Bucs and the Rams, they ran all over you. And then the Raiders really ran all over you. So with a running back that was injured. So something's going on there. I don't know if it's, you know, hey, everybody's got to do their job and gap discipline and all those same things we hear over and over. But having those things happen as often as they have in succession, that it you get to a point where you're going, okay, I'm not looking past the Panthers. You couldn't look past the Texans at this point. You wouldn't be able to look at them and go, well, the one thing they're not going to be able to do is run the ball or be able to do this. I think everything's up for grabs when it comes to what you're going to get from this defense. You don't really know what you're going to get. And we're, you know, you're building up the Rams like, well, I think they were fired up. And they still have Jalen Ramsey. And they still have, well, yeah, but they don't have running backs. They don't have a running attack. They didn't have an offensive line. And they ran it down your throat. So, you know, that leaves question marks when you face any other team at this point.
Yeah, that part's a huge concern. I don't think we will have an answer on that until you see that it's fixed again. Because that little glimpse of, what, three games where it was figured out and there was definitive improvement for three straight weeks, that adjustment has now been countered by every other team. The Bucs, Raiders, Rams, maybe the Panthers. Those other three teams, they have figured out, all right, well, the Seahawks have made this adjustment. They now know how to do this. If this guy does that. You know how Dave always talks about if this guy does this, what read has to be made?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the linebackers and the defensive line were in sync. And then the other team said, look, if they're going that way now, we're going to adjust and throw something new at them. And that adjustment has not been countered yet. So until they stop them defensively, sure. I get that that's going to be a concern. But if you look at this offense, I think there are all doubts have been erased about the offense's ability to score and then score late in the game. That was the one lingering question, right, about the offense. Could Geno Smith and could the offense, when they absolutely needed to, it wasn't a fatal flaw yet, but it was something that had become pretty glaring because it was the Falcons, a little bit the Saints, and then certainly you had the Raiders looming. So not getting it done then, that was the big issue. That has been answered. And that gives me confidence that, all right, late in the game, if it's somehow still close, the offense is going to find a way.
All right. Reminder, don't forget, tomorrow night you can join hosts Michael Bumpus and Paul Moyer at 7 o'clock at Bellevue Square Center Court for the final live broadcast of the season. They'll preview the Sunday's matchup, Seahawks taking on the Carolina Panthers, and they'll be joined in person by Seahawks player Austin Blythe. That's in person tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, Bellevue Square Center Court. And tomorrow night we're giving you a chance to win tickets to see the Seahawks host the 49ers on December 15th. That's a Thursday night game, so you can learn more at seattlesports.com/events. Coming up, Mitch Haniger is now a member of the Giants, but what if he had stayed healthy last year? It's What If Wednesday. It's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
What?
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 It's time for What If Wednesday.
Coach would have put me in fourth quarter. We'd have been state champions, no doubt.
Wyman and Bob rewrite the scripts of major moves and moments in sports every Wednesday afternoon. Now step into an alternative reality with Wyman and Bob.
What If Wednesday, presented by Mazda of Everett. We ask the hypothetical question, play the What If game, and this one surrounding Mitch Haniger, who released a statement earlier. Said, I'll read, it's not that long, says, Seattle, thank you for embracing my family and I the last 6 years. It was an absolute pleasure to play in front of all of you Mariner fans at T-Mobile Park. The Pacific Northwest will always hold a special place in my heart. Thank you to all my coaches and staff members throughout the entire organization. Huge thank you to all my teammates. It was an absolute honor to lace up with you guys. I appreciate all the love and support throughout my entire time as a Mariner. Excited for 2023. So there's a statement released by Mitch, and he was nothing but class his entire time here. And the question, the hypothetical we're throwing out there is, what if he wasn't injured last year? Which is a big, I mean, you know, we were counting on him coming back from a career year where he was healthy the whole year. And that was battling back from a huge injury the previous year. So to see what he did, hit the ground running, and he never looked like he was ever impacted by the injury the year before, you're excited. I was excited. Like, okay, maybe he's just finally found the right recipe. You know, he comes off a season where he hit 39 home runs, drove in 100, 318 on base. Never been a huge average guy, hit for 253 that year. But then he played 157 games in 2021. He played 57 during the regular season in 2022. So In that time, he hit 11 home runs, drove in 34. Had he been healthy, I got to believe he would have been very similar to what he was in 2021. Well, there's no reason to believe he wouldn't be there.
Well, would he be on the Mariners this year? Would he be on the Mariners now if he was healthy?
I think if he put together back-to-back seasons that are similar, maybe he doesn't hit 39. Maybe it's 34, something. I don't know. But if he's in that same ballpark and he plays 157 in 2021, if he's just something similar to that year, 2 years in a row, I think he's still a Mariner. I think they make a concerted effort to bring him back. Now, you know, do they put the qualifying offer out there? Does it change that? Does it change what they would be offering him? Because you would have to believe it would change what was available on the market for him, too. I mean, he got 14.5 coming off a year he played 57 games in the regular season. If he's got back-to-back years of 150-plus games with 30-plus home runs and close to 100 driven in, what kind of market does he have out there now?
Yeah.
So it's tougher across the board. I think there's more competition, changes the Mariners' strategy. Maybe they throw that qualifying offer out there. Maybe they're just more aggressive in trying to get a deal done. You know, I don't know. But I think it's different. I think there's a much bigger effort on their part to make sure he stays.
Yeah, and what's interesting, and I know we'll talk about this news a little bit as well, but an off-field signing just happened.
Yeah.
Masataka Yoshida, who we just asked John Morosi about 10 minutes ago, Jeff Passan reported that he signed with the Red Sox, 5 years, $90 million.
Son of a!
Plus a $15.4 million posting fee. So total cost, $105.4 million. So it's not a story of the offseason, or word of the offseason. It's not a robust outfield market anymore.
No.
And we knew that once you got past the top tier outfield free agents, once you got past Judge, it was not really a good class of free agent outfielders. The Mariners certainly need a free agent outfielder, or they need an outfielder. A free agent could help. But Yoshida, an option that had been bantered around, kind of thrown out there as, well, this is a guy the Mariners like that they're going to be in on. He's no longer an option. So not having that certainty, and I think if Mitch Haniger is healthy, they certainly extend the qualifying offer because you get some draft pick compensation if the guy turns that down. I don't know if Mitch Haniger would have taken it. He probably would not have from everything that we've seen and heard about him wanting to hit free agency. But at least you then get a little more out of it. But you know what? We also don't know. Maybe the Mariners push harder during the season to sign him to a contract.
Yeah, maybe they don't let him get there.
And I think that probably would have happened because, you know, he's out for a big portion of the season. You have to kind of hedge your bets and say, well, is this a guy we want to lock up in the middle of the season long term when he's not even here with us? If he had been producing at that 2021 level, even comparable to that, had he been playing in every single game, Mitch Haniger, there's a much bigger push to keep him, and he might still be on the Mariners this year. It's that great what if, because now this outfield is a looming question for Seattle.
Yeah, it's so funny because it's so opposite of last season, right? Mm-hmm. Where it looked like, well, what are you going to do? Where is everybody going to play? You brought in Winker. You figured Kelnick was going to be there. Obviously, Mitch was going to be there. Julio is there.
Kyle Lewis.
Yeah, it's just, my goodness, it's amazing how different it is now. You're going, all right, well, you got Teoscar Hernandez, who, again, love that move. Not a great outfielder, not Winker, but not great, not his calling card. You got Julio, and I guess Kelnick. You're counting on Kelnick to be a guy you can rely on that's going to be out there, and you know, barring a move that has yet to be made, which you assume they're going to make a move. They've said it themselves. So, yeah, it's amazing how different it is from the previous season, just as it pertains to the outfield and how you feel about it going into the season.
It kind of worries me, not to get on a completely separate topic here, but you kind of brought this up as well about the pitching and about the health of the pitching last year and the fact that it's always thrown out. You can never have too much starting pitching. So do the Mariners have enough starting pitching? I know we'll talk about a guy coming up a little bit later that maybe, not that the Mariners should have signed him, but starting pitching seems like such a minor concern to have right now. But we also thought outfield would not be a concern. And that gray, well, yeah, you have too many people. Who are you trading away because you have too many outfielders now? Oh, what a good problem to have. Well, no, you had a couple of games where you played three infielders in the outfield. That was that first game out of the All-Star break. The Mariners, when Julio got scratched late, did not have a single true outfielder in the outfield in that opener against the Astros. So, yeah, you can never have too much outfield help, as we learned, and you might not ever have too much pitching help, so maybe another potential area to look at for Seattle. But, of course, if you're going to try to trade for someone, you're going to be depleted.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
I don't know. It's how they handle this is going to be fascinating. And something, just a little preview of what we're going to talk about tomorrow. Something Morosi said about, you know, Ohtani and where he thinks he may land. You know, we've had Ryan Divish on a couple times saying the Mariners are going all in on Ohtani next year. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean they're going to get him. And if you're holding back this year because you're going to pursue him next year and you don't get him, that's going to be interesting, depending on how this year plays out. If you get to the end of the season, we're going, man, we came up short. If only we'd gone after this guy or that guy, but we wanted to go after Ohtani, but now he ended up on the Dodgers. It's going to be an interesting place to be. But we'll talk about that in more depth tomorrow. Coming up, we're going to talk about the O-line, this run game. What's been happening out there? Is it the backs? Is it the scheme? Is it the running attack itself? We'll get into all of that with Big Ray Roberts. He's going to join us next year with Wyman and Bob. We got Lefko in for Wyman. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.